All over New Hampshire, towns are divided into even smaller communities. Barnstead contains Center Barnstead, Barnstead Parade, and South Barnstead. In Tamworth, you'll find Chicora, South Tamworth, Wanalancet, and Whittier. And Suncook straddles the line between Allenstown and Pembroke. But there it is, in its unincorporated glory. The more you look, the more you realize. New Hampshire towns are riddled with little villages. That's the issue at the center of an Only in New Hampshire question we received. Why are so many towns split up this way? To get a better understanding of how this came to be, I hopped into the car and made the trek up to Grafton to talk to someone in the know.
So my name is Andrew Cushing. I work for the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance. I'm the field service representative, which means that I travel the state and meet with communities concerned about saving old buildings.
Andrew's from Grafton, and he knows the town pretty well. And there's actually a small detail here that really gives him an advantage.
So I have to confess, so my father wrote the history book for the town of Grafton.
Having a father who wrote the official history of your hometown would give anyone a leg up in the historical society. And it also makes Andrew an ideal guy to help explain Grafton's layout. Because looking at a map of the town, it gets confusing, fast. There's the whole town itself, which is named Grafton, but when you take a closer look, you'll realize it's split into several different parts. There's Grafton Center, then a few inches away, about 3 miles according to the scale, is Grafton Village, and a few inches after that is East Grafton. I spent the afternoon with Andrew to get a better understanding of why there are three smaller Graftons all within town limits. But when we first headed up Turnpike Road, we didn't head towards any of them. We headed up a hill to where the whole show started back in 1785.
In 1785, the Baptists, who were really good at proselytizing to the peripheral towns folk, so they would try to create congregations in the wilderness, trying to kind of duke it out with the Congregationalists to get power in some of these rural towns.
When the Baptists arrived in the 1780s, they built Grafton's first meeting house up on Razor Hill. Two taverns hugged the meeting house, and Razor Hill was the center of town life. Until it wasn't. Only 12 years after the meeting house had been built, those Congregationalists Andrew mentioned earlier, they got the upper hand.
So we're on Razor Hill in Grafton. Grafton Center came a little later. But Grafton Center came about because while the Baptists claimed this spot, most people in town said, wait a second, this isn't the exact center of town. We want to build another meeting house.
So that's what they did. In 1797, the townspeople, led by the Congregationalists, started coming down off the mountain, and they built a new meeting house in the geographic center of Grafton, which is why the village that eventually grew up around it became known as Center Grafton. So that's where we headed next.
We just pulled into Grafton Center, which is kind of the, from a macro view, the iconic New England village. You have the church at the head of the common, and it's ringed by all of these houses that were probably built between late 1700s and early 1800s. And a war memorial in the middle, and hill surrounded by hills.
Center Grafton was established because of religious differences and sheer geography, and that's one reason towns can get split up into separate villages. But another big reason? The railroads. 50 years after Center Grafton was settled, the Northern Railroad came through and connected the whole town to the rest of the world, a shift that was happening all over New Hampshire. And that's when things really changed for people living in Center Grafton.
And this is kind of the story of New Hampshire. When the railroad came through, the economic and religious and social centers of all towns shifted to where the railroads built their depots.
A quick refresher. Railroads revolutionized life in America, not just out west, but in places like Grafton, too. Depots cropped up every 3 miles or so, establishing stores, boarding houses, and industry in places that used to be in the middle of nowhere. Which gets us to the next spot on our map. About 3 miles east of Grafton Center, down Route 4, you come across Grafton Village. This is where you can find the Grafton Country Store, the post office, library, and former Grafton Inn. In its heyday, Grafton Village had the largest side rail on the Northern Railroad, which meant a pretty large and active freight yard. And aside from infrastructure, the railroad put new places on the map, literally.
Because railroads needed to have special names for their depots to avoid confusion on like data logs or schedules, it kind of made concrete those village names and those village identities that we now see today.
Even though railroads made a huge impact on places like Grafton Center and Grafton Village, they weren't the only source of industry. and the communities that formed around them. We got back into the car and continued further down Route 4 before making a left turn back onto Turnpike Road to get to our final place on the map, East Grafton. East Grafton didn't have a railroad depot. It's sitting back towards the hills, but it does have another resource. Mill Brook runs through East Grafton and powered the mills that used to sit along its banks. Most of those buildings are gone now, but the old carding mill is still standing, and it's a perfect example of Grafton at its prime.
Built in 1823, and this was in operation through the 1920s, and it's just a small 2.5-story wood frame building, timber frame building. And at its peak, it employed 25 people who worked here 12 months out of the year.
And all that industry and money coming into a place like East Grafton helped turn it into a little village all its own.
Really, by 1900, you have shingles being made here, you have clapboards, you have bobbins, you have boxes, you have, I already said shingles, but you have coffins and carded material, so like yarn and wool and flax, and you have cider being pressed. So it was really an industrial hub.
Another popular product coming out of Grafton at the time were bungs, stoppers for barrels. After an accident involving a cartload of them, East Grafton took on the name Bungtown, a name that might be making a comeback if Andrew has anything to do with it.
Probably thanks to all the neighbors, I got the historic marker here earlier this year, and so the name is now back in our, back in view.
I know. It does smell like Christmas in here from that wreath. Grafton, the town as a whole, I mean, is still small. Our ringing the bell at the East Grafton Meeting House didn't quite bring people running.
Ooh, it's very impressive.
It is.
But Andrew did tell me he later got a lot of questions around town about who he had been talking to. The population is back around 1,200 people, roughly the same it was at population peak in the 1850s. But that's after dipping to around 300 in 1970. People don't really have a reason to distinguish between villages anymore, since the railroad has stopped running and the mills have shuttered. The main thing all the villages of Grafton have going for them now? The highway. Which means that people don't have to live right next to the place they work and the place they worship. So, the story of New Hampshire's villages, at least up in the old industrial towns, seems to sit with transportation and changing technology. But when it comes down to it, a village is just a place. Somewhere that was once a community within a town, with a separate identity, neighbors that knew each other, maybe a general store and a library. Just people, establishing a sense of place. For Only in New Hampshire, this is Molly Donahue.